Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Nutcracker Syndrome podcast. I'm so excited about this episode. I have Dr. Brooke Rundle with us today. We're going to do a deep dive into a specific therapy modality that I used that really did a lot of heavy lifting for me. It's internal family systems therapy. So I'm excited to bring that to you today. Dr. Rundle has been working in that space with IFS. We go way back. I had the honor of working with you, Dr. Rundle, as a student, and now we're colleagues, and it's been wonderful navigating that space, getting to know you more, collaborating with you more on things like this episode. So I'm going to hand the mic over to you. Introduce yourself a little bit. Let us know who you are, your credentials, and just what you love to do, and then we'll get into it.
Thanks so much for the introduction. My name is Dr. Brooke Rundle, and I am a LPCC licensed provisional counselor in Colorado, based in Colorado, and I am also a certified mental performance consultant in the sports psych space. So I do my theoretical orientation is really foundationally internal family systems, which is also referred to as IFS, or also known as parts work. And so I do use that as one of the modalities that I work with a lot when I visit with my counseling clients here in Colorado.
I love that. And just so to talk a little bit more about internal family systems, also IFS, also parts work, Dr. Richard Schwartz is who founded this. And there's also a book out there called No Bad Parts. And that's how I was interested in IFS. I'd seen it floating around on the internet, bought the book, learned a lot about it. So that could be a good start for you all, as well as the book No Bad Parts. I just love that name because it's really just exudes compassion for self. And that's so much of what IFS is. So
It
thank you.
does.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Is
I
there
was just going to
anything?
say, that's how I got introduced to IFS as well, actually. I listened to the No Bad Parts as an audiobook, and one of the reasons I would actually recommend this book as an audiobook is because the founder, Dr. Richard Schwartz, guides you through some of the actual practices and meditations or mindfulness exercises, and you can actually start to get a sense of the work just from those guided audios in the book that are actually included. So I think that's a helpful way to explore what that work might look and feel like for you if you're just wanting to kind of dip a toe into it.
I love that. I didn't do it as an audiobook, but now I'm like, that's genius because he has it written out and you're reading it to yourself, but you can't. It's weird trying to read the meditation you're guiding yourself through and actively doing it. Something else I did, I got like a little obsessed with IFS. So I read the book. Then I just went into podcasts and typed in Richard Schwartz. And there's a bunch of podcasts out there. I shouldn't say a bunch, there's a handful that he actually does episodes guiding the host of whatever the podcast is through their own parts work. And that was really powerful. It really, like, I almost felt like I was working on my own parts doing that. So for some of you all that don't want to necessarily jump into this work, I myself personally have a specific Barbara, shout out to you. She's helped me unlock so much. She's my IFS therapist. She had been with me through the whole medical process now postoperatively. And so, if you don't want to just jump straight into finding a therapist, these are some kind of light ways that you can dip your toe in the audiobook, doing the podcast, just to see if it feels like a good fit, if it resonates with you. So, I think that's a good way to kind of introduce this. Let's do a little bit of a deeper dive, though. So, Dr. Rundle, tell us just a little bit more, break down internal family systems for us.
Internal family systems is a non-pathologizing and evidence-based theory that is person-centered for people in therapy. It's really, I like to think of it as a more of like a mindfulness-based approach to both self-acceptance and also somatic awareness. So soma, somatic aware, soma, the word somatic comes from the word soma, which means body. As you can imagine with this, especially with this community, having more awareness of what is going on in your body, more awareness of how you're reacting to what's going on in your body, how different parts of you are reacting to what you're experiencing, Can be really powerful. So for me, both as a practitioner and then also as a client, I also see an IFS therapist myself. It's been really helpful to, for me to explore that that type of approach that integrates both body and mind and not just all up in the head. So within IFS therapy, and I think this will just kind of be like a general brief overview. We're not going to go too deep. It's beyond the scope of the podcast. But when we say internal family systems, a lot of people hear that and they immediately think, oh no, my like my family's fine. I don't need to work on family stuff. And even although many of us do, that name I do think is a little bit misleading because it's actually you can do parts work and find out that yes, some of the parts that you're experiencing are based in family trauma, but it's actually not about your family of origin. It's actually about your internal family. So their internal parts referred to as family. It's actually a family system rooted as a family systems approach, meaning from a therapy perspective, we're taking a systems approach of the idea that we have a core self and we're made up of multiple parts within ourself, and all of those parts are functioning as a system. So when you first hear that, it might sound like a little much, but if you've ever had the experience of like, well, part of me feels one way and part of me feels another way, and I can't make up this decision and we're in conflict and I kind of go back and forth about it, then you've had the experience of having multiple parts within your body. It happens all the time. So especially if you're activated by some sort of trauma, whether it be within your past or if you're currently experiencing trauma, that can be a really helpful way to approach how you are to gain insight in yourself and how you're reacting. So that's what we mean by internal family systems. We're really taking a systems approach to the internal parts of ourself. And within that, within those parts, the parts are categorized into there's different names, they call them protectors. And we're not going to get, I don't want to get too deep into the different types of protectors today, but I do think it's helpful to understand that there are protectors, and then and that those protectors can be sort of divided into like the idea of managers who are really often like really protective parts trying to control and manage everything, and another sort of re typical response might be firefighters who are more like reactive protective parts who are just gonna like numb and escape a situation. And those are the two types of protectors, and both of those protective parts are protecting the parts of us that are referred to as exiles, which are more young, sensitive, childlike parts, and those are often the parts of us that were like maybe traumatized as a child or something like that. So there's different parts. You don't need to know them all, but I do think it is helpful to understand that these through study research studies and interactive therapy sessions that you'll be able to start to hopefully get a sense of a map of your parts, the different parts that you have that sort of get activated or triggered in certain situations. And the goal would be to just to continue to gain your own self-awareness and self-insight into the parts that you have and how they're reacting and how they're triggered, and why what you can do to sort of get some relief and also increase your own sense of self-regulation around how you're reacting, so that you are generally more a peace person.
Absolutely. I think you did such a good job of explaining that of internal family systems is just understanding that you are a complex landscape in and of yourself, and it's just a way to more intimately get to know you. And the more I've leaned into internal family systems, like prior, I'd be like, I know who I am. And now I'm like, I really know who I am because I've come face to face with my insecurity. I've come face to face with my panic attacks. I've come face to face with my anger and my guilt. My joy even, and really like sat with my body, where do I feel that? So when I say now I really know who I am, I can more confidently step into spaces, and I can also more confidently make hard decisions because I'm relying on my internal landscape. They trust me, I trust them, type of a thing. And so I was writing down some things you said I want to highlight for this community. The concept of pathologizing is huge because in
Mm-hmm.
mental, right, we always think like, oh, therapy, they're going to tell me I have an general anxiety disorder, they're going to tell me I have general depression, there's going to be like a diagnosis. And when you're in the medical space, especially as a Nutcracker syndrome patient with such a rare condition that the majority of the medical community doesn't even know about it, so that contributes to the loneliness there. I had already been doing mental health for a long time, but I could suspect that there's people that are like, I don't want to start mental health and then get another diagnosis. Like, I don't know if I can handle that. And IFS isn't a place to diagnose. It's truly a place of self-reflection, coming into a stronger relationship with the self. So I wanted to highlight that. And another part that really stood out to me is where you said, if you've ever said a part of me feels this way and another part of me feels this way, I cannot tell you, that's common across everything, but it's so common within this community, more particularly given the lack of guidance that we have. You get diagnosed with Nutcracker, and really the only thing out there is a Facebook support group. And it's a little bit all over the place because it's a lot of vulnerable people that are just really scared and trying to connect the dots. You don't have doctors that can really tell you what to do. So now you're left with nobody's telling me what to do. The thing with IFS that's really helped me become more empowered within myself to be able to intuitively make really hard decisions. And it wasn't really a doctor telling me what to do. I have a lot of people reaching out to me like, well, like just a phone call yesterday with one of my really good Nutcracker friends of, well, what if I do get the surgery and it actually doesn't help? And I'm like, but what if you do? And then they're like, but a part of me is like, but what if I do and it does help? And so it's just, you're making a hard decision of undergoing a very severe surgery that could potentially, there's a lot of fears associated with that. Internal family systems has helped me re I'll go with my parts. They're all sitting in their stadium seats. That's how they present themselves. And I'm like, what would we like to do? And it's been cool because then I can come out of that feeling empowered to make a decision that's right for me. And people might question why I did what I did, but I just know that it was right for me. So my hope with this episode is for people to maybe feel a little more connected to self after listening to this, maybe digging into some more literature on IFS and feeling empowered to know you have the answers within you. Your body knows what it needs. I intuitively knew that I needed the auto transplant, and I had some people telling me otherwise. I had surgeons saying, well, we're not going to accept you for this surgery. And it did contribute to my doubt. But I'm so glad that I made the decision, did the surgery, because I feel exponentially better. Gosh, we're 4 days away from my 5 month post-op at the time of this recording. So awesome. I want to also, your breakdown of internal family systems, how might you see if we were to, that was kind of a macro approach, if we were to almost kind of deduce this a little bit more, how might IFS from your clinical perspective show up in a medical space?
Well, I think that I mean, IFS is not gonna help you diagnose physically, right? It's not. In some cases, it can help people manage pain. In others, it is not successful with that. That's really not the intention. The intention is to, I go back to helping you gain self-insight, and self-regulation. So helping you really understand what is going on internally, and help you lead your life, make decisions as you navigate the medical system, as you have to advocate for yourself constantly in the medical system, as you're faced with doubt or fear, or having to make decisions from positions of maybe a mindset of scarcity versus a mindset of abundance, to help you get to that place where you feel centered and self-led. That's ultimately the goal of IFS. So in the midst of all the chaos, in the midst of all the suffering and the pain that you're experiencing, the IFS can help you get to that place where you're making decisions from a self-led place. And by self-led, I mean the internal sense of self, whatever that means to you, where you are able to not make decisions from a place of like scarcity, but of abundance and confidence and clarity and calmness. And in IFS, they use they call it the like 8 C's of characteristics that we're always trying to get ourselves towards. That includes confidence, calmness, compassion, courage. There's others, other C words, but you get the sense of those are the words that describe that are like when we're in that centered place of self. And so that's ultimately what the goal is. And so as you as you're experiencing physical symptoms, I mean, we see this all the time in therapy, mental health therapy, that sometimes physical symptoms are caused from our like there are roots to psychological trauma that we can use them as a path. We can start with the physical pain and use that as a path to help deconstruct, decolonize, and the trauma that one has experiencing. And sometimes that can lead to lessening is a person's physical pain, but a person with Nutcracker, that's I'm not at all saying that the IFS is going to be able to help with those symptoms in that physical sense, but it might help the person. It might help you navigate the medical system. It might help you. It's certainly going to help with relationships as you're having to navigate this new orientation in your world, to be able to continue to center yourself and lead kind of navigate through that self-led place.
Okay, everything I'm resonating so hard. I was like, couldn't type fast enough. I want to bring to life some of what you said. So, like, take the baton, the beautiful golden baton that you just set this up as. A couple years ago, maybe about 5, 7 years ago, I really started changing my philosophy of when we're dealing with pain in any format, that it could be not solely emotional stuff, but there could be some emotion attached to it. So let's say that you come down with the flu, or you start having your lower backs chronically hurting. Obviously, go and get that physically checked out. This isn't it's all in your head, but it's a both and. Let's also explore this and see what emotional, like psychological components are potentially attached to this. So the first thing that Barbara, when we I got the diagnosis. I was obviously in pain, but it started revving up closer to time. She invited me and said, "Would you feel comfortable sitting with the chronic pain?" And depending upon in the session where the chronic pain was showing up, sometimes it would be the left flank, that's classic. Sometimes it would be kind of in the bladder area. It would be my left leg. I had musculoskeletal problems with my collateral veins going into my spine, up into my chest. Sometimes it would be chest pain. So she would ask if I was comfortable with that, and I wasn't. Like I was like, I don't really want to do this work. But because often we want to distract ourselves from it. Pain is something we've socially been taught to try to get rid of at all cost. But going back to the seas of self-leadership, the courage it takes to sit with these really hard physical feelings. So I'll take the left flank pain. We had a session where I just sat with the left flank pain, and she walked me through a meditation that was inviting, I'm cleaning my house and I hear a knock at the door, and I go open the door and it's my left flank pain. And she might say, is it presenting itself as an image or a color or, and they would personify themselves as people. And I remember my left flank really personified itself as kind of this ghostly figure that was like a gray black. I couldn't really make out what was going on. And she was like, if you feel comfortable and if they feel comfortable coming in, invite them into your home. So it was a very compassionate practice of, oh, I'm so glad you're here. Thank you for showing up to my home. I've been cleaning it for your arrival. And I would invite the left flank pain in, quote unquote, this ghostly gray white fi or gray black figure into the space. And when I invited him in the space, it was interesting because it started to change colors and it became more gray. And I asked if it would like to sit down. I could go grab them some tea. And it began to change into this yellow color as I could tell it was becoming more colorful based on the color it was changing. And this is all kind of happening naturally. I'm not mentally forcing this to happen. I'm just kind of sitting with this pain. And I'm just like, thank you for coming. Would you like anything? Do you have anything you'd like to share with me? And sometimes these parts don't necessarily just come out and start sharing. And if they're quiet, I just say, I'm here. I'm going to compassionately sit with you and love you. And I'm not trying to wish you away. Like you were valuable. Like I care for you as my left flank pain. And as time went on and we had multiple sessions of sitting with my left flank pain, this part began to feel more comfortable, trusting me more to start opening up. And it really started speaking about the fear that I've been living with in my life. So as we were working on the fear, and I had some memories pop up with that, and I was working with this part, the left flank pain didn't necessarily dissipate, but my relationship with it changed. So what I mean by that is I used to, when it would come, almost be like, oh, gosh, the left flank pain's back. Like almost like I was annoyed with it. Versus after these sessions in internal family systems of compassionately showing up for it, courageously leaning into this intimate relationship with the left flank pain rather than hating it and being disgruntled towards it, the pain was there, but my relationship with it changed in the sense that when I would wake up every morning, the left flank waking me up, almost like knocking on my morning door, and I would just be like, it's nice to see you again. Like I had a more loving relationship with it. I changed my self-talk with it, where I was more like, I know this is challenging, and you're also ready to not be in pain. This is a lot for you, but you're not alone. I'm here. We're gonna get through this day. I'm gonna listen to you. And by changing my relationship with it, and we do know from a neuro from like a neurobiological standpoint that there is a neurological component to pain. So if we perceive pain as bad and anxiety provoking and things like that, it turns the knob up on the pain a little. So maybe the somatic pain is a 5-6, but depending on your cognitive appraisal of the pain, if it's anxiety inducing, it causes a lot of fear, it could turn it up to a 7-8. So some of the internal family systems help me control the knob a little bit by shifting me into a self-compassion space where it didn't alleviate the pain, but it changed my relationship to the pain, and it helped turn the dial down a knob or two. So if I felt like I was getting into more of a fight or flight response where I was really anxious and I could tell a lot of fear was coming up, I would sit down and I would check in with whatever part of my body was hurting, whether it was the bladder, the left leg, and I would just be like, hey, how's it going? And I would literally sometimes, if I was in a room by myself, talk to it outwardly, like I'm doing now. How's it going? You're not alone. I hear you. I'm not going to brush you under the rug. At times, I would try to not even rush to taking medication. I didn't want to get into the habit of, I'm just going to go take more meds to silence you. But I would actually be like, give it time. And there were times it was like, yeah, we need to go take that gabapentin, we need to go take the muscle relaxer. But I allowed myself to sit with that part a little bit more. And the knowledge of self that I learned by not being scared to lean into the chronic pain, I'm so grateful for Barbara helping me through that process, because I also shifted my mindset. And I want to be like careful in how I say this, because I felt like this diagnosis was an opportunity for me to get to know myself better on a very deep emotional level. It was really challenging, and I don't want to. I want to navigate, be kind of tiptoe just a little bit, is because I don't want to necessarily be like, oh, you should be great. Like, chronic pain is hard. I don't want to invalidate the nightmare experience that it is, because it is. And how can we lean into this as a we're in it? So how can we morph our relationship with our body in a more functional, adaptive, productive way, instead of that deep, dark hole that I've been in? And really, to me, internal family systems therapy really helped me. I still was in the black hole, but it helped me change my relationship with the black hole just a little bit. That really dark, no light. You can't even see the light at the end of the tunnel. And you just wonder if it's still worth it. So I wanted to bring that portion out to bring life to the concept you're talking about. That also, you brought up the helping your relationships, because when I encountered my left flank pain presenting themselves as my emotion of fear, and I address that fear intrapersonally, so with myself, I wasn't taking my fear out on Kyle as much, my partner. And I started realizing how I was being snappier with him at times. I was maybe reading into some of his behaviors in a way that was more fear induced rather than like, oh, he's also had a long day, you know, like there wasn't as much the more essentially the more confidence, clarity, calmness, and courage, the more self-led I was with all those eight C's, I was able to engage those eight C's with my partner, with those that were in my life. So thank you for bringing that up, and I hope some of those listening can maybe feel more encouraged to sit with that chronic pain and look at it as potentially an opportunity to get to know yourself on a deeper level. And I also want to encourage you, if that feels overwhelming to you, that there are therapists there that can help you, guide you along that journey. I don't want you to try to drink out of a fire hose, because that can be really overwhelming. Therapists kind of help you drink little at a time as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for adding that. I think that's really insightful. And the title of the book, No Bad Parts. I mean, I think that's what that's so much of the messaging of IFS is that self-acceptance and starting to when you start to feel a strong emotion or have a strong reaction is to there. Or any sort of uncomfortable or unpleasant feeling, the natural response is to just push it away, to numb it, to get rid of it, to distract, to not feel it anymore. And this approach invites some real self-interrogation of what is going on within yourself and why are you reacting certain ways and why are you having strong feelings in any particular moment or in any particular relationship, and that and to accept and invite really from a stance of curiosity, I think is the word that I would really lean on, from a place of curiosity to just really start to understand yourself more as opposed to just trying to shut it all down and numb it out.
Absolutely. It almost makes me think in the chronic pain space, like taking the title of the book, No Bad Parts, and just reframing that a little bit to saying there's no bad pain. And I think because society, anytime, I mean, we were also athletes growing up. So there's some of this that identity intersected too into how I cognitively appraise pain, because in the athletics world, you need to have a physically strong body to be able to perform. And I think some of that philosophy creeps into just life in general. And of course you don't have to be an ex-athlete or an athlete to have that life philosophy, because society just let's intersect this with diversity, equity, and inclusion. I mean, let's bring ableism culture into this. I also had to, and I'm still facing that head on, even with Kyle. Like, we're processing through how the ableism narrative that we've been born and raised with, there's no getting out of it, influenced how he showed up as a support person, influenced how I did or didn't ask for help. And what I mean by that is, in an ableistic society, we view an able-bodied person, somebody that doesn't have disability, somebody who's not dealing with chronic pain, who can show up and give 100% every day, and there's no physical barrier holding them back, 100% as it's determined by capitalism, as it's determined by productivity culture. And I really, my self-worth took a massive hit. I mean, because as you know, Dr. Rundle, like I'm a professor, I'm an artist, I'm an author. Like, I was just full steam ahead, and then all of a sudden, everything took a major halt, and I really, really had to deal with the identity of who am I if I'm not producing? And that's a really, really hard one. You know, even Kyle and I had to deal with that within the relationship, because ableism also influences relationship dynamics. Like, now that I'm horizontal 80% of the day and he's having to do everything, he started having kind of annoyance. Like, he could tell he was getting irritated, you know, and us working through that and how that's connected to ableism. So, we also didn't consent. It's not like our body asked us, like, are you okay with me? Like, throwing a chronic illness in? Are you okay with me like all of a sudden breaking down? So there's some of that, like, I didn't consent to this. It feels unfair. So I think also centering an ableistic narrative with internal family systems, there were parts of myself that came out that were very much founded on that, the discriminatory nature of ableism, how it has seeped into the fabric of my being at an implicit, deep level. And I'm now intimately, kind of cringily, like having to deal with it. I'm like, oh, I don't like this. I mean, I teach diversity, equity, inclusion classes, and I think we like to go about life being like, well, I'm not racist and I'm not homophobic and I'm not ableist. And what I tell students all the time is like, the first step is just accepting the fact that if you were raised, because you were raised, not if, because you were raised in a society that is homophobic and racist and ableist, you are to some extent engaging in behaviors that do promote that. And it was very, very vulnerable, very deep sobbing therapy sessions where I really had to swallow that pill. And but the beauty is, by swallowing the pill, the parts were like opening up to me more and helping me see and digest. So I love what you're saying here. I would also love, one of the major things, and I'll actually share something. This happened to me last Monday. And probe, if you will, kind of open up a larger dialogue here. Maybe some people in the audience can. I'll put it this way. I was raised into a high anxiety family, so I have high trait, high state anxiety anyways, you know. Got good coping resources in the field that I teach in, and therapy. But whenever I got this diagnosis, I went on anti-anxiety meds that really helped. And I got my treatment. Gosh, we're almost 5 months away. So a lot of people think when you get treatment and then you're going to be good. But I actually had this really profound meeting, kind of serendipitous meeting with a transplant patient in the gift shop at UW Health. And he looked at me, he's like, "You're a transplant patient." And I was like, "How do you know?" But if you look, like, you have your little pain management thing that you're walking around with. You have your mask on. Like, there's a particular transplant patient look. And we chatted, and he ended by saying, "Don't underestimate the deep depression and anxiety that comes after the surgery." And at the time, I was like, "Oh gosh, yes, thank you for letting me know." But I remember my first thought was like, "Well, I'm not a traditional transplant patient. I'm not on immunosuppressants." And boy, has his words really been hitting me recently, because just last Monday, I had my first major anxiety attack. Like, on the ground, almost calling 911, thought I was having a heart attack. Extremely, extremely scary. Thankfully, Kyle was there. And also, thankfully slash unthankfully, he has had pa these type of panic attacks before. So he's able to kind of guide me through it. I also thankfully had a session with Barbara set up for the next day. So I was like, thank you, panic attack, for happening the day before my IFS session. So I go in and I'm like, you know, "Buckle up, Barbara. I want to talk to you about this panic attack." And I knew when it was happening. I was like, I've done internal family systems long enough that I was breathing through it, and I was trying to compassionately say, "I know, I feel like you're a part of me that's really backlashing right now. Like, something's going on, and I'm getting closer and closer to this exiled part of myself." And this protective part's like, "Oh no, 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 no. We cannot allow this." So I go to my session with Barbara, and she says, "Yeah, it really sounds like your body somatically, circling back to what you said, Dr. Rundle, kind of at the beginning, talking about IFS, it's a somatic experience. It's connecting you to your body." And when I sat with this part, it was the deepest. It was so, so scared. It was almost like it's the last, you know, when animals, what is it called? The death throes of animals, like when they're about to die and they just like, they wail and they fight and they get really aggressive. That's what this part was doing. Like, it was holding on for dear life. And when she walked me through that, I had to work with this protective part, this panic attack part, and it was very stubborn. And I just kept saying, "It's okay. Like, I'll sit with you. I'll sit with you." And finally, when I said, I think I asked this part. I said, "Do you trust me with the exile that you're protecting?" And I'm even getting chills now thinking about it. She didn't say yes. This part presented as a feminine part for me. She didn't necessarily say yes, but I felt her almost like shift from like a I'm never you're never gonna touch this part to a I know I can't keep living like this. I know that I can't keep functioning like this. And I just said it's okay, and however long you need to trust me, like I'm not gonna go touch this exile part of myself until you provide permission. That's your job. And I said, can I give you a hug? And the moment I hugged her, it was like she just like felt like all dead weight. And I started sobbing as my self-led self. Like I felt the deep, deep angst and exhaustion of just decades of this protective work. And I said, do you mind like if I just go speak to this exile part? And it was the first time I had. Most of my exiles I've come in contact with have been like middle school age. This part of myself was 2, 3 years old.
Oh, very young.
Very, yeah. And I told this part, I said, do you feel comfortable going and sitting on the sidelines? And you can watch and you can provide, like I'm not saying you have to leave and I'm banishing you, but like I want to be compassionate towards this has been your job for decades, is to protect this part. And I'm the first person you're allowing to come in and talk to this exiled part. And I said, so you can sit on the guidelines, and if at any point you want to stop. So I still allowed them space to be able to interject. But the more they saw me interact with the exile, the more comfortable they became. I kept checking in with the protective part, the panic attack part. How are you doing? Are you still comfortable? And this exiled part of myself was very much associated with not having control in my life, whether that be my family not giving me autonomy as a kid. And now I'm in a medical community that I feel like I don't have control. My body didn't ask me. And that was an extremely powerful session I had, obviously, with my therapist. And something I've been doing since then, so something I'll kind of tell the audience too, at least with my experience, is my job now is I keep checking back in with this protective part. I keep checking back in with the exile. It's not a like, okay, I have this massive breakthrough and then we're good. I do open my eyes and feel like, wow, colors are more vibrant and things, there is a higher sense of clarity. But my job now is continuing to remind these parts, checking in with them, how are you doing? Is there anything else that I need to know? Are there other parts that are coming forward? How can I let these parts transform? So the work I'm doing now with my protective panic attack part is you don't have to do this job. You don't have to be this type of protector. You now have permission to be whatever you want. So what is that? And they keep telling me, I don't know yet, I don't know yet. And I keep saying, that's okay. Just know that I love you enough that I'll keep checking back in. In my exile, I say the same thing. Now, knowing that I, as your self-led person, am providing you autonomy to choose what you want to do, and I'm going to provide you control. What is it that you want to do? And there was actually a really profound thing that she shared with me. She handed me a black crown. And this is almost for a full circle moment with my left renal vein, because I remember I said that there it presented itself as this kind of ghostly gray black figure that morphed into a yellow kind of beaming light. My exiled part handed me a black crown and said, I want you to go make art with your fear. And I was like, oh boy, okay. And I said, okay. I was like, absolutely. So I keep checking back in with her just on my own time, also as guided by Barbara. So I kind of do a both and. I've been doing this long enough. I kind of know how to navigate some IFS on my own, lead myself through some own medications, but also having Barbara there to help guide me. And I keep just saying I've been writing music with local musicians. I've been doing comedy bits for comedy shows and stuff. And now I ask myself, I say, how can I invite fear in to help me create? And that's actually been really therapeutic for me. And it's also letting my exile part know that they matter to me and they are, It's not that I'm just kind of giving them a pseudo sense of control, but
Right.
bringing them in. So I hope by sharing that example, both of a how I was doing parts work with the physical pain itself, but
Right.
also this kind of right, like I had this major panic attack. So it wasn't like I just went, it's a controlled environment. Like sometimes people in the Nutcracker community, there's comorbidities with POTS, MCAs, so mast cell activation syndrome, which is, breaking out in hives a lot. So if you have your body that does present as a physical, like whether it's a MCA breakout, it's a POTS flare, it's an EDS flare, inviting you to maybe think about it as a part that you can work with on an emotional level. It can also be very a holistic approach to addressing what you're going through in what feels like a wasteland of depression.
Wow. I love what you described as part of your IFS journey of asking the protective part to stay on the sideline and stay nearby. I think that witnessing is so important to build the trust and to then eventually allow that part to step back and stop doing what it has been done. I mean, and maybe just rest or take on a new role in the system. And that's such an important part of the journey, is that witnessing from the protective parts. So that really resonated.
Yeah, I'm curious with you doing some of this parts work. Are there some common themes that you see coming up? Like how you talked about, like I think trust is a really big component of this, and it's having your parts learn that they can trust you. Maybe because there's been a rupture in trust with other trusting relationships, familial relationships, friendships. So it's turning it interpersonally on trusting yourself. So, have there been some common themes that have come up for you in doing this work with others?
Yeah, I mean, I think the process is very common with every time you start to engage and do parts work. It is to find the part initially within the system, and sometimes we do that somatically by identifying where it is you feel it. So maybe it's coming up as tightness in your jaw, or pain or nausea or something in your stomach or another area of your body, and really starting to focus in on that area and letting that be really a path towards where we want to go ahead and explore what you're actually experiencing. I think that the mistrust or the guarded trust is a very, very common theme. So always approaching parts like you're approaching, I always tell my clients, like you're approaching a young child or maybe like a scared animal. Excuse me one second. So you want to approach your parts very cautiously and genuinely, that your parts can tell if you're not going to be able to like sneak one past your parts. If you're not being authentic with your parts, they're not going to trust you. It's just like a child. You need to show up and be real, and start to build that trust just as if you were meeting them for the first time. And that journey, once the sort of guard start to drop and you start to build that trust, then the first step has to be recognizing the true intention of that part. So not going into that part of, okay, the protective part or whichever part was causing the anxiety attack for you in that moment, what was their true intention? Was it to take you out? The answer is no, it was not. We have to trust that our parts are not intentionally trying to hurt us. They're actually trying to help us. It's just that the techniques that they're using to help us are oftentimes really outdated. They're trying to help, but it's actually not, it's no longer helpful. It might have been helpful at one point in time in your life, but it's no longer helpful now. And I don't know if that goes all the way back to when you were 2 years old, I mean, who knows what was happening? I don't want to necessarily make guesses and project that on you, but I think that it is important to recognize that idea of that there are no bad parts is that there's actually no bad intentions in the part. It is true that the parts certainly can hurt us. They can in physical ways, emotionally, psychologically, absolutely. It can be the source of addictions and disassociating and other things. But the intention is not to hurt. The intention is to help. And so once we recognize that intention, it often then disarms the part. And you can start to recognize how are you trying to help? When did this start? When did you start helping in this way? When did this become your role? And oftentimes it goes way back, right? So like you said, 2 years old, this part been doing this for a very long time. Now, I'm not saying you're that old, but two is pretty young.
Absolutely.
So the part's been in this role for a very long time, and what we need to do is recognize the good that it did, that it's been doing a job that it probably didn't want to do, and then and maybe had resistance from other parts in the system or yourself. And so we're and then once we recognize how it has helped you in the past, then we're thanking it. So we're thanking the part and recognizing, and you did all of that. Thank you for showing up in this way. Thank you for trying to protect me. Thank you for protecting me as a 2-year-old. And we're doing all of, and once we start to recognize, and that's when you reach that point in the journey, that's when it's really important not to fake it, because it will know if you're faking it. So you really have, if you aren't truly feeling grateful at that moment, then it means you're not ready. You're not really re ready to engage. The part's not ready to stop doing its job. You have to do more work to get to know the part, and you have to understand the true role of the part and the intention of the part. And it will always be good.
Absolutely.
And so once you're at that point and you can genuinely, truly, show up authentically and thank the part, at that point, it most often in my work that I see starts to let the guard down. And then you can start to either approach or exile as you did, or start to work with the protector to actually just start doing a different role in the system. And oftentimes the protectors are so exhausted by doing their job that they just want to rest, or maybe they're going to do something completely on opposite, like complete opposite end of the spectrum. So if a part was giving you a panic attack for some reason, maybe their job is going to be to just be calm. And you describe that, to invite your fear into your art. I mean, that's like literally, like that is like a picture of what, like, maybe the opposite of a panic attack might be. So that's exactly what it did.
Yeah, I want to two things you said. One, I want to highlight gratitude because I think that's something that we haven't, like, we talked about trust kind of as a theme, talked about mindfulness and being accepting. But the thing that's been really powerful for me is approaching my parts from a space of gratitude and really, really, truly feeling that, like, not just a like, yeah, thanks for what you did, but we need to stop that. And so it's constantly letting them know, thank you so much. Like, at one point you were functional for me and you were created to protect me. Hence the name of a protective part. And truly thank you so much for that, because I've gotten to where I am today by you doing what you're doing. And I just want you to know, you don't have to keep doing this job. Like, thankful for your service, but if you wanted to choose what your promotion was, what would it be? Like, let's promote you. Let's not keep you in. Some of it is like, you'll hear people say, I've heard it said a lot in like, if people don't seek mental health, like, I have people in my family, for example, they're like, well, he's like a 3-year-old. Like, that was his first, and he's never dealt with his trauma, so he's emotionally a 3-year-old. And I could nitpick that apart a little bit, but I do think to some extent that concept is powerful, because if we're not going into our protective parts and promoting them at the, like, from an emotional standpoint, then they might be stuck at that 2 to 3 or protecting a 2 to 3-year-old. And we have to say, like, some of also what I do as well as Barbara, my therapist, will remind me to tell the part, like, or I'll ask the part, do you know who I am? Like, not like a do you know who I am, but like a are you aware, like, almost reintroducing myself to a part, like, I am a, I'm an adult and we've done this, and almost like letting the part know, like, I can take the reins now My family's not the ones with the reins anymore. My other social support isn't. I am, and it's safe to give until you feel like you can trust me. I just want you to know it's safe. When I reintroduce myself to the part, I feel a shift sometimes because I'm like, oh yeah, I guess you have been the one kind of running the show. But I was still operating off of thinking it was your mom and dad running the show. We just need to tell them like, oh yeah, I took over. I'm the CEO now, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. And that reintroduction can be so important sometimes. Sometimes the protective part might be kind of like almost like frozen, like in a time capsule, like thinking of you as that 2-year-old that initially needed protection and doesn't recognize that you have an entirely different set of resources available now that you can use to actually, run it, be the CEO. So that can be really important.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I think so much of what we talked today, selfishly, this has been a great conversation for me. I just feel like, I mean, anytime you and I connect, I always leave very energized, and I just want to thank you for that and the relationship I have with you. And then this episode, I think not only just helpful for me, but I think it's really going, a lot of people in this community, not just Nutcracker, but the medical community in general, really needing as much resources as they can get. I think this episode really has been added a lot of value. I know it has to me. I do want, is there, I guess before we kind of get into the conclusion, is there anything else that's come up for you that you want to add to the conversation?
No, I just want to thank you for having me. I think that, I certainly don't want to, it can sound like I'm preaching IFS. There's certainly lots of other modalities. I think everyone needs to be on their own mental health journey and find what resonates with them the most. It's not necessarily for everyone, but I do think that IFS in particular can be helpful for folks suffering from chronic pain, because of the somatic awareness component of it, to help you increase your own insight and navigate that sort of the somatic pain that one's experiencing. So I think that's particularly why this version of therapy is helpful, but also can leave you with some resources if you're wanting to find an IFS therapist. There's an IFS Institute. And on the IFS Institute, at the top of the sidebar, you'll find a professional. Those are all IFS therapists that are licensed. You can also go to my website, headstrongmindset.com, and reach out that way. But with if you're looking for therapy and this that you need to find a therapist that is, within your state or local to you, that IFS Institute website is going to be the most helpful because you can find them across the country and even across the world. So that would be really helpful for you if you're
Absolutely.
looking for an IFS therapist. Yeah.
Yeah, and for the audience, I'm going to link the IFS directory to the show notes. I'll link Dr. Rundle's website as well. And you operate within the state of Colorado, correct?
That's correct for now.
Okay. Yeah, for now, yeah. So just I remember you saying that in the beginning, but to circle back to that, one thing I do want to end with is I can hear some people being like, yeah, mental health is all great and everything, but I don't have insurance. What if an ISF therapist doesn't take insurance or isn't in network for me? Are there other and also this episode obviously highlights IFS, but there are other modalities. I've done EMDR, which is eye movement desensitization and reprocessing. That's another somatic experience. There's cognitive behavioral therapies. Are there other resources that are out there for that people can access mental health that's affordable, that takes into example queer identities, all of those
Yeah,
things?
I mean, with therapy, mental health therapy, so much of it, licensing is state by state. So it's really going to be dependent on based on what state you're in if you're listening in the US. I'm not familiar with other countries, but within the US, it's going to be state by state. And so I know within the state of Colorado, there are free resources available. There are like mental health, you can get short-term therapy available for free. There's also IFS therapists that there's many IFS therapists that accept Medicaid as well. What I would suggest is going to Psychology Today. And looking up, you can look up therapists, you can just do a search for IFS, and that's going to take you to just like by your state, and then you can look for sessions on like that for therapists that accept either your insurance or sliding scale options. That's going to be the best. If you are really wanting therapy, there are many ways to get it depending on where you're at. But I know that here in Colorado that they're either through the state of Colorado, through the LGBTQ centers, there's short-term therapy programs that are pro bono that can help you get connected or help you get access to Medicaid to be able to get more of a longer-term therapy care option. So it's just going to be state by state.
Wonderful. And I want to highlight something called the sliding scale too. I always, when I've reached out, I remember I was in between jobs once and didn't have any income. And I wasn't even with Medicaid at the time. But I remember just reaching out and asking, just know that you can ask that, do you take sliding scale? Do you do sliding scale? And what that is they will, I think there's some paperwork you need to submit. Sometimes your tax return from the previous year, I think is some of the paperwork I was asked for. And then they can give you again, the sliding scale is kind of like, okay, based on your income, this is a new kind of price bracket that I'll offer to you at a lower rate than what maybe their normal rate would be for a client. I think a lot of it is just empowering to know what to ask of therapists. Psychologytoday.com is a great place to go. You can filter too on there. So like filter by state, filter by therapy type. So you could even choose, I think the internal family systems is represented on
It
there.
is,
EMDR.
yeah.
Yeah. You can choose something else I really want to normalize for this audience really quickly is thinking about what type of therapist would you feel safe with? And I never really thought about this until I first started therapy, and the receptionist asked, would you prefer a male or a female therapist? And I was like, oh, I hadn't really. And I think I just said female at the time. And I have tried male therapists, but I've just learned that for me personally, I do lean toward the female. But if you're also wanting somebody that, non-binary, that's queer, that's like really kind of specializes in that, you can filter for those things too on psychologytoday.com. There's a couple other websites I'm going to link to the show notes to. That's beyond Psychology Today. I think there's one called browngirlstherapy.org. I forget the exact name, but I'll obviously link that in the show notes. So you all can meander these different platforms that are geared toward specific communities as well. Any other things that you want to add, Dr. Rundle?
No, I will send those resources over to you so you can add them to the show notes
Yeah.
and just want to be available for anyone. If you have any follow-up questions, feel free to reach out. Happy to make myself accessible. And thank you, Dr. Erner. You're just an amazing resource to this community and my community, and just really appreciate you and all the work that you're doing in the world.
Yeah, well, thank you. This has been very awesome. Again, I get so much energy from not only doing this podcast, but just from engaging with you. Thank you for the value you've brought to this community. I'll be promoting it to some of my doctors, some of my surgeons. Just say, hey, here's a really valuable, like the podcast itself, but this episode in particular, I think can really hopefully jumpstart and empower people to think about mental health as an aspect to help them navigate this extremely hard time. And we don't need to do this alone. I mean, it's such a lonely process when you're diagnosed with something, because no, it's just you getting on that operating room table. It's just you being taken under anesthesia. Nobody else is doing it with you. It's so lonely. So how can we bolster a better support group with friends, with family, but also with a therapist, with particular medications and things like that? So again,
Absolutely.
thank you, Dr. Rundle, so much. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you so much for having me.